So Pavlov walks into a bar. A bell rings, and he says, "Damn, I forgot to feed the dog." Okay, that's not the best joke, I know, but you can learn some things even from jokes that aren't funny. The three elements are there: Pavlov, empathy, because most people have heard of Pavlov and have at least a mildly positive opinion of him. But he's usually thought of as the bell ringer. Again, an expectation is broken, and we laugh. And then we laugh even more when we realize that he's been conditioned by the bell, too. For the rest of this service, I invite you to be aware of the process by which you hear and process a joke or witty saying, and the factors that make you find one joke funnier than another. My father was a joke teller, particularly fond of what were known as shaggy dog stories. Thankfully, I won't go there. I've had a lifetime supply already. But the process of telling and hearing jokes fascinated me. One of my favorite jokes from the period goes like this. A comedian named Joe took his friend to a comedian convention. As it turns out, the comedians had a large book with all the jokes in it, and each one was numbered. They'd all memorized the book. So to save time, they just repeated the number. So someone stood up and said, 46, and everybody laughed. Joe says to his friend, "I like the way he tells that one." Then someone else got up and said, 79, and nearly everyone laughed, but not Joe. "I've heard that before," he said. Another one got up and said, 37, and hardly anyone laughed. "Oh," Joe said, "he really botched that one." So why do we respond to jokes in this way? I think it has a lot to do with this sense of expectation. In my younger years, I was introduced to NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and learned a lot about how we respond to things that are said to us. One important idea is that when we hear words, we're going through a background process, almost unconscious, of accessing images and associations with each word. The processing of the actual meaning of what was said comes later, and to a considerable degree, we try to anticipate what the next few words will be. We're especially taxed by negatives. If I tell you not to think of a pink elephant, it's impossible to process or understand that sentence without some part of you thinking of a pink elephant. That process of developing expectations about what will be said is valuable to us. It can make conversations flow more smoothly. But carried to an extreme, it would make life very boring. Same old, same old. There'd be no room for the unexpected, for creativity, for adopting a new point of view. And sometimes this process can work against us. When a car salesman asks you what color car you'd like to buy, it's impossible to even understand the sentence without some part of your brain entertaining the idea that you buy a car. Similarly, statements like, "Have you stopped abusing your spouse?" cannot be understood at all without at least a brief flash of spousal abuse coming into your head. I think many jokes that don't seem funny to us are because the underlying premise is too uncomfortable to accept. We lose the empathy. Humor messes with our anticipation engine. It stops for a moment the mental chatter. It's a moment that, though short, has a kind of timelessness about it. Your mind is in free fall, and then you get it, and things return to normal. Puns are another kind of humor. As a geeky, socially challenged young man, I embraced puns to an almost horrifying degree. I would often use puns to cover up those awkward pauses in conversations. "Did you hear the sad story of the red blood cell and the white blood cell? They loved in vain." Thankfully, this stage didn't last too long. Another form of humor is wit. Mark Twain once said, the only difference between the tax man and the taxidermist is that the taxidermist leaves the skin. Or George Carlin's musing on his religious beliefs. I'm not an atheist. I'm not an agnostic. I'm an acrostic. The whole thing is a puzzle to me. There's a social component to humor as well. I remember once going to a one-day workshop sponsored by a technical organization. It was held close to a major computer manufacturer's location, and 80% of the attendees worked for that company. A company vice president gave an after-lunch talk during which he told a number of jokes. Some of them were quite funny, and everyone laughed. Some of them were not quite so funny, and the only people who laughed were employees of the company. And some of them really weren't very funny at all, and the only people who laughed were the managers who worked for the company. Laughing at a joke is a sign that you approve of the speaker, and sometimes that urge overrides any inherent humor in the joke. With enough humor and other joys in your life, unexpected events start to trigger unexpected and often funny responses. When I first heard that Elon Musk shot a Tesla into space not long ago, the first thing that came to my mind is, where's he going to plug it in? It's also remarkable how sometimes a single word can be funny. When my son was about 4 or 5 years old, my family was having lunch with a group of friends, and we had the following conversations. Mom said, Nat's getting curious about sex. Nat, here Curtis' name, swiveled around and said, what's sex? My friend said, see? I have very fond memories of the columnist Herb Cain. He loved words. He's credited with inventing the term beatnik. He would refer to the meal the day after Thanksgiving as deja food. And once referred to the Golden Gate Bridge as the car-strangled spanner. And he shared his amusement that a highway in the Sierra was being kept clean by the Immaculate Conception Men's Club. His columns were that way too. Nothing was off the table. He would talk about going to a Giants game in the afternoon and the opera at night. His sense of humor opened him up to life and also gave him a lot of fodder for his column. I think many humorists today have that kind of openness as well. Yogi Berra, known more as a baseball coach than a humorist, nevertheless delivered hundreds of lines like the one I chose for the title of the sermon. If you come to a fork in the road, take it. In the strictest sense, it's meaningless. But this void is quickly filled by our trying to make it mean something. Take it could mean take it on, confront the choice with courage and make a conscious decision. Or it could mean don't ignore it. Be aware of the possibilities even as you pursue some and decline others. Speaking of a once popular restaurant, Yogi said, nobody goes there anymore, it's too crowded. Or a quote I used in a previous sermon, if you don't know where you're going, you'll never get there. I use that at work all the time. It's not just famous people who sprout lines like this. I once heard a friend say with a perfectly straight face, I don't mind being patient, I just don't like to do it for very long. Some writers have suggested that humor is an essential part of personal growth and transformation. If we take ourselves too seriously, it's hard to be open to others and to new paths and experiences. The ability to laugh at yourself can be an important part of maturity, and those around you will find you more approachable. In a relationship, you can hardly go wrong if you pick the funniest person you know. My wife and I hardly let a day go by without a good belly laugh or two. Joy is in very short supply in the world, and it responds to cultivation. I'll end this with my favorite joke. I told this joke from the pulpit several years ago, but it bears retelling. It has all the right elements: empathy, expectation and a glorious punchline. It goes like this. Two old guys were sitting on a bench talking about heaven. "What's it like?" one said. "Will we still eat? Will we still sleep? Will we still have sex?" They made a pact that whichever one died, he'd come back and tell the other one what it was like. So in due course, one of them died. The other was sitting on the bench a couple of days later when he hears, "Joe, is that you, Pete?" He replied, "Yeah," Pete said. "So what's it like?" Joe said. Pete replied, "It's fantastic. I wake up each morning, have breakfast, sex until noon, eat lunch, sex until dinner, eat dinner, then sex until I fall asleep." "Wow," Joe said, "I can hardly wait to get to heaven." "Oh," Pete said, "I'm not in heaven. I came back as a rabbit in Montana." So enjoy the rest of the show service.